Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
It's more like Boris Karloff.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on the 1,000th and first day of Theresa May's Prime Ministership. We didn't actually mention that she'd had 1,000 days yesterday because everybody was doing that. We're going to do it on the 1,001st day, which doesn't even sound right. We are at Talk Radio, of course. We're back in the studios. Unfortunately, there is no reason to celebrate, though. She's off to Germany and France today in the death throes of her leadership. The only good news for her is that she's actually meeting in Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron, two people who might actually be more unpopular in their countries than she is in hers. We will check in with the countdown clock this morning as well to see just how close we are getting to nothing happening on Friday, which of course is the next day at which we're supposed to be leaving the European Union. I think the House of Lords has basically kiboshed that. First up though, we're talking about the blame game. It might not be working very well in our broken political system, but it is now being introduced into divorce legislation. From now on, no one partner can stop the other from getting a divorce, which at the moment can result in delays of up to 5 years. But is it going to make divorce a little bit too easy? 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll be finding out why a judge thought it was a good idea to let a Turkish gang member stay in this country because his criminal activity apparently made him socially and culturally integrated into Britain. Well, that's all right then. And we'll be talking about the end of the drinking culture at work as well. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, the story that we're all looking at this morning on the front page of The Times is one in which it says spouses lose the right to fight divorce at the end of unhappy marriages. At the same time as looking at all of that, of course, we are seeing, rather unfortunately, being played out in front of the great British public, the divorce and the breakup of the Cracknells marriage, James Cracknell and Beverly Turner. James Cracknell, of course, the Olympic rower, who remarkably made a comeback in his 40s to win the Oxford and Cambridge boat race this past weekend, even though he's twice as old as everybody else that was in it. It's a remarkable story. It's a remarkably sad story in a way that Beverly Turner has decided to tell all and sort of wash her dirty laundry in public. But let's talk, first of all, about the general principle of what happens now to husbands and wives who actually do get divorced. And to help us, let's talk to Elaine Richardson from Resolution, a family law organisation and campaign. Elaine, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Hi.
Thanks
Mike.
Very much indeed for joining us. Tell us at the moment what the law lets you do, because my own divorce, which happened many years ago, was originally contested, but my own lawyer said to me, well, you can actually get divorced for any number of reasons and you don't actually need the other person's permission. Has that changed recently?
No, it hasn't. And our divorce law is 50 years old and it's certainly not fit for purpose at the moment and moving forwards. The sole ground for divorce is the irretrievable breakdown of a marriage.
Right.
But you're required to provide evidence by way of a fact to support that. And so these are the facts that people will have heard of, such as adultery, unreasonable behaviour,
right,
2 years separation with consent, and 5 years separation if there isn't consent.
Right. And what is it about that needs to change? Because it seems to me that you can say unreasonable behaviour about almost anything, can't you?
Yes, you can. And there have been some extraordinary things that have been reported in the past. I remember one ground which was based on unreasonable behaviour, and that was that the husband insisted on speaking Klingon.
Klingon.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, there have been some marriages that might have been benefited from that, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe. But you can see how ridiculous it can be.
Well, I can only talk from my own personal experience, and I was very much told at the beginning, well, you could say that you don't like the way that somebody puts the cap back on the toothpaste, or you don't like the way the sock drawer is organised, and that can be sort of, you know, irreconcilable differences or unreasonable behaviour.
Yeah, it can be. And, of course, the problem with it, basically, is that it increases the conflict between a couple when things are already difficult. And therefore, that can have a knock-on effect in the way that they parent their children in the future.
Yes. So, I mean, as far as what is happening now and what David Gawke is announcing as the Justice Minister, I mean, what will change? How is it that this will now make it easier?
So the way that it's going to change is that the irretrievable breakdown of the marriage will be retained as the sole ground for divorce.
Right.
But you won't need to provide evidence of a fact. So, in other words, all those things that I've just described, adultery, unreasonable behaviour, 2 years separation, etc., they will just go and you will just make a statement of irretrievable breakdown.
Right, OK. And so, I mean, I know your organisation's campaigned for this particular change. Is there a danger that you say you might see more people getting divorced because this will make it a bit easier for them?
No, and this is generally reported, of course, in the press, this assumption that it's going to be easier.
A shibboleth, I call it.
Yeah. In my experience, and I'm a member of the National Family Law Committee of the Law Society, as well as being a family solicitor, I'm also a family mediator.
Right.
And in my experience of dealing with couples over the many years, this is not a decision that anybody takes lightly. It's a really difficult life decision, isn't it? It's going to have an impact on you and on your children for the rest of their lives. So people do not just wander into divorce willy-nilly.
No, I don't think they do. And, I mean, not as many people, I suppose, as before are getting married either. So, I mean, I suppose what we want to do is to try and make sure, Elaine, that when people do get married, they're doing it for the right reasons. And then if they are going to end up splitting up and getting divorced, that they're doing that for the right reasons.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where family lawyers can help, of course, because they can properly advise people. And one of the first things that you would ask somebody is there any possibility of reconciliation?
Right.
And you'd always explore that with them. And I'm so happy to see today that Aidan Jones, the chief exec of Relate, thoroughly supports this change and talks about the outdated fault-based divorce system.
Right.
So, Relate are definitely on board with this.
Because in one of the pieces I'm reading this morning, they quote the case of Teenie Owens, who's 68 from Worcestershire, who says that she's trapped in a loveless marriage.
Yeah.
And I think last July, the Supreme Court actually ruled that she couldn't get divorced.
That's right.
Which is
an
extraordinary story,
yeah.
Isn't it?
In this day and age, isn't that just dreadful? And that's what this antiquated divorce law ultimately leads to.
Yeah. I mean, it seems incredible that you can be stuck in that sort of situation. I mean, she's been fighting this case for a while now. Will this mean that she could finally get out of it?
It could do if the time frame was right. But my understanding is that this has got to go through Parliament yet. So there will be a bit of time before the law is actually made.
Right. I mean,
I know that the government's really committed to doing that, supported by the Ministry of Justice, which is fantastic.
And the other problem, I suppose, for a lot of people is this business of having to be separated for 5 years. I mean, if you haven't got a divorce settlement and you haven't had financial kind of distribution of monies, how are you supposed to do that?
It is really difficult. And, of course, a lot of people are in the financial situation whereby they have to carry on living under the same roof.
Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, people are putting up with some terrible situations because of this antiquated divorce law.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely shocking, isn't it? And as far as the whole kind of mediation business goes, because there was a while, there was a plan whereby, which I think was brought in by the Blair Brown government, I think I'm right in saying, which was to make sure that people went to mediation first before they even were able to get to the next stage. Is that still the case?
Yes, it is still the case. But because mediation is a voluntary process, it's in two stages. And the thing that people have to do before going to court is, if you want to make any sort of court application in relation to children or the finances following separation, then you must attend a mediation information meeting.
Right. And is there an issue with apportioning blame in the sense that once you are looking at so how you kind of divvy up the money, does that depend on whose fault it is? Is there any sort of logic to that?
No, it doesn't. I'm happy to say that those two things are not usually related.
Right, OK. And I mean, I don't want to... I'm sure you don't want to get into the personalities involved here, but, I mean, it's kind of dispiriting for me, at the same time as this story's out in the Times this morning, that in the Times yesterday, Beverly Turner was talking about the breakup of her marriage to James Cracknell. I mean, I assume as a family lawyer, you would not recommend going to the papers with the sort of the family's secrets, as it were.
No, and I listened to your reference about washing your dirty laundry in public, and obviously that's best avoided for the sake of the children more than anything else. Having said that, I also read that article, and it seems to me that she was trying to take out some of the potential acrimony that could have been there.
How was she doing that, do you think?
Because she was talking about the difficulties that her husband had had with his bike accident.
Yes.
And how, you know, how difficult it is when somebody suffers that type of accident to their brain that leads to personality change.
Mm. I mean, so, I suppose, interestingly enough, they've always been in the public eye. I think they wrote a book together about the injury that happened to him while he was cycling across America and how, in fact, it had changed their marriage and it was difficult, but that they were still kind of together at that point. So I suppose maybe celebrities have a different way of doing these things because they're in the public eye and they decide to talk about it.
Maybe they do. But, of course, everybody who experiences divorce will have the need to talk about it. And, again, I can't recommend highly enough those family lawyers that are experienced in dealing with this type of work because there's also, it's not just law, it's not just hard letter law that they're helping people with, but it's also a sort of therapeutic intervention as well to try to make matters, you know, less bad, try not to make matters worse than they already are.
Sure. And is it still the fact that it's about 50% of marriages that end in divorce at the moment? Is that changing? Is there anything that's likely to change in that number?
It is round about that number. Data shows that out of every 5 divorce petitions over the last 3 years, close to 3 relied on those unreasonable conduct facts and adultery, and 2 on separation facts, so usually the 2 year separation with consent.
Right.
But nearly half of the petitions in 2016 to 18 relied upon the unreasonable behaviour fact. And, of course, that is the most terrible way to start off a divorce or the mediation process, where you have to say as a mediator and as a solicitor, you know, one of you has got to blame the other. I mean, that's a terrible start to a process where you're trying to get people to put their differences to one side and solve some financial problems and problems related to the children in a sensible way.
Mm. Well, that's right. And also, generally speaking, as you'll know from your own experience, Elaine, in the business, it's never one person's fault, is it? It's always two people's fault.
It's very often that is the case.
Even if one party appears to have done something dreadful and unreasonable, there's usually a sort of an underlying reason why they've done it.
Very often that is the case, yeah.
Yeah. What about the mediation thing we talked about? Does that ever stop people getting divorced? I mean, are there any statistics that show that if you do go to mediation, there is a chance that you can save the marriage?
Sometimes people will come to mediation with me and say that actually one of the things they want to discuss on the agenda is going to marriage guidance counselling.
Right.
So that's that. You know, that the potential to do that is always there. But the difficulty is that
and it actually made it worse.
It can be an uphill struggle, yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't be laughing. It was a long time ago, you know, and my kids have grown up now, so they're fine. But, you know, it wasn't a helpful manoeuvre, let me put it that way.
No, well, sometimes you have to kiss a number of frogs before you can find your prince.
Well, that's true. I'm still looking for my prince, if you know what I mean, but that's another story. But yeah, listen, so we don't expect to see this being sort of finding its way into legislation for a while, but congratulations on winning the campaign. How long have you been campaigning for this?
Oh, at least... Resolution has been campaigning for this ever since it was founded, and that was over 35 years ago.
Okay.
So it's been outdated for an awful long time.
That is interesting, isn't it? And are we still the kind of divorce capital of the world? Because we see an awful lot of very wealthy couples getting divorced in London in particular. And the belief being that that if you are getting a divorce from a very wealthy individual, this is a good place to do it because you get more of a share of the loot.
Of course, that depends on which side you're on.
Well, sure. But I mean, presumably, if you're on the side of wanting to take the money from somebody who's got a lot of money, then you would file the case in London, would you?
Potentially, you could do that. But of course, I think that what happens is the press leaps upon these cases.
Yeah.
And then it's a bit skewed so that people think that, you know, these cases are happening all the time and we are the divorce capital, etc., etc. I mean, in relation to most people, that type of divorce bears absolutely no resemblance to the majority of people in this country, where most of the cases are needs-based. In other words, there's not enough money to split between two people to enable them to have the same lifestyle that they have.
Sure. Yeah, it's a sort of a very big part of everybody's life, this, and it's important that we talk about it. But Elaine, thank you very much indeed. Elaine Richardson there from Resolution, which is a family law organisation. Imagine campaigning for 35 years for this change to the laws of divorce, which basically means that you don't have to blame somebody else. You can have a no-fault divorce. You don't have to, as is the case with this terrible story up in Worcestershire, Teenie Owen, 68 years old, who cannot leave her husband because the judge says that she has not proven that he had the marriage had irretrievably broken down because of his unreasonable behaviour. So she has to stay married to the guy. Meanwhile, they have to try and live apart for 5 years.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
You are beautiful, no matter what they say. Words can't bring you down, no, no. You are beautiful in every single way. Yes, words can't bring you down.
Now, it will come as no surprise to any of you listening out there that I am indeed beautiful. Not just because I think I am, but because of the way that I am. I've gone down a list of 10 things that show how you have real beauty. And I've got all of them. I have to say, I'm delighted to say that I'm now going to talk to Joe Emerson, who's a confidence coach, and Claire O'Connor, scientific skincare advisor, because we're going to find out precisely what makes me so beautiful. Joe and Claire, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
Thank
good
you so
morning.
Much for joining us. Now, we're going to have to do this in some kind of order, aren't we? Otherwise, we're all going to be talking at the same time. So, shall we start with you, Joe?
Yep.
The 10 signs of real beauty. Tell me what they are, because I can absolutely tick every one of these.
Okay, well, you absolutely can, Mike. Well, there's loads of signs, but the top 10 in this research, kindness in how you treat and speak to others, being honest, making others feel more comfortable, simply being happy, laughing at yourself.
Yep.
Happy to be yourself in front of others, courage, not judging others, and knowing when others need a shoulder to cry on.
I think that's there's a lot of that in the radio business, as I'm sure you can imagine. No, but I mean, there's always people looking for a shoulder to cry on in the radio business, and that's what I'm here for. But seriously, I mean, this is very important stuff, isn't it? Because we have so much emphasis these days on, you know, how you look.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the whole Love Island thing going on, and people going, oh, look how beautiful they are. And that seems to be all they care about, their outward appearance. But in fact, this is far more important.
Well, you know what? I think as this, so this research was done by Boots Number 7, and they've asked me to come and kind of chat about confidence and authenticity. And, you know, I think as a Generation X woman, which is, you know, the people, you know, the research was done on women of my generation.
Right. So is that 30, I get confused about that. Is that sort of 30-something?
39 to 53.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We are, quite frankly, a little bit sick of being told how we should look and that there is only one way in which to be beautiful.
Right.
And then, of course, what happens is as you get older and you know, mature.
Happens to be one of the greatest generations of women, by the way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes, of course, we can have lunch later.
Mm. no problem. I finish at one.
You know, we are sick of being told what beautiful is because, you know what? You realise as you get older that beauty, our beauty, yes, it's important that we all want to feel good, but actually what we're emanating out from the inside is so much more important. You know, and when I met my partner, the first thing he said to me was, "You are just yourself, aren't you?" And I was like, "Yeah, kind of, yeah." Like I'd let go of a lot of that old stuff that I believed in my 20s. You know, I was being myself, I was being being genuine. You know, I think things like strength as well, compassion, empathy, all of those things are really gorgeous. And the research isn't saying don't put makeup on or don't worry about how you look. It's just saying that there are two kind of sides to this, you know, and what we feel on the inside is reflected on the outside and vice versa.
Sure. And it is difficult as well for younger women, I think, now because of the, you know, like I mentioned the Love Island thing. I mean, if you're a young woman in your 20s, you know, there might be a new form of feminism, which is great. And all men are now much more willing to be feminist than they used to be. But still, women are held up to a higher standard, aren't they?
Yeah, it worries me. I've got three daughters who are in their early teens, so they're heading in, you know, in that direction. And I think what worries me is that there are these impossible standards being portrayed in certain parts of the media. And I think as well, we were just saying actually before we spoke to you, Mike, you know, guys, I mean, how is a young man supposed to know how to speak to a woman these days, you know, without fear of offending? And it's all just got really confused. And, you know, I do think the pendulum needs to swing back the other way and we need to be focusing a little bit more on these, you know, these other things.
Yes. And I know that number seven probably, I mean, I could be wrong, doesn't do male makeup. But I mean, there's a lot of men wearing makeup these days as well.
Well, they do skincare.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yes,
Claire can tell you all about it.
Well, go on, Claire.
We do skincare for men. So if you any worries about that? We have.
Luckily, I don't, because also not only am I beautiful, but I'm also my skin is also amazing.
We know that, Mike. We know.
But that's because you've been using number seven moisturiser, isn't it?
No. But you know, I'll give it a go. You know, I'm not shy. So there is a male line then.
Yes, of course there is. Yes, we're not disregarding the men. It was just that this was kind of focusing on Generation X women. So that's more why we've just talked about the women.
Right.
But yeah, you get down there. Get in there. There's a serum, a moisturiser. It'll all be great for your skin.
But if we go back to this whole kind of real beauty thing, you know, men who are themselves and are, you know, kind of genuinely being, true to themselves. They're more attractive as well. You know, this goes both ways, right?
Oh, of course. But also, I think it is a bit of an age thing, isn't it? Because you become more sure of yourself as you get older. You become more comfortable with yourself as you get older as well. You can't really teach that to people, can you?
No,
maybe you can, I don't know.
Well, you know, in my work, you know, I work with people who actually are in the middle of their lives and have often had a massive confidence crisis. We used to call it a midlife crisis. Mm. It's actually a real stage of life. It's like shedding a skin. And I, you know, I teach my clients that confidence is a muscle. You have to exercise it in the same way you exercise any other muscle in your body. So I think for some people, confidence is the natural part of aging. I think for others, they seem to lose it. Mm. And that's when you have to redefine your confidence. And it needs to be based far more on who you are as a person and not the car you drive,
sure,
how you look, your dress size, the house you live in, the job you do, etc.
And funnily enough, we were talking this morning, there's a change in the divorce law coming now.
Yeah,
where you
I saw
can
that.
Get divorced without having to blame each other, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've known quite a few women in my time who were quite miserable in their marriage and who got divorced and actually suddenly blossomed into very confident individuals.
That was me.
Was that you?
That was me.
Well, maybe I do know you after
that
all.
That was me 8 years ago.
Right.
I had this new career as a result of that. Absolutely. That's exactly what happened to me 8 years ago.
Right. Because a lot of people are stuck in a sort of rut, aren't they? So, I mean, if someone's listening to this and saying, well, it's all very well, nobody's really that nice and that beautiful inside and all of that. I mean, you can learn, presumably, to be a bit more like the 10 things that we just mentioned.
Oh, completely. Completely you can learn to be those things. And, you know, it often comes with realising that the life you're living isn't working for you and having the courage to say, I can't do this anymore. I genuinely can't do this anymore. And then seeking the help you need to do that. But, you know, and also, but not disregarding. I was saying earlier on to a friend, you know, I think my grandparents' generation and my mum's generation, they almost sort of hit their 40s and thought, oh, no, it's
all
bit,
over.
It's a bit icky. It's a bit ugly to want to look good. You know, it's, you know, we should, exactly, it's all over and women shouldn't want to look good, in the middle of their lives. And that has changed. You know, we can invest, you know, in how we look as much as we want to, but we have to invest in who we are as people.
Yes.
Life's ever evolving. You know, you have to grab, you know, life as it is. you know, right now. And, you know, I certainly do not regret for a second leaving my marriage, you know, in 9 years ago.
Well, and, as long as you don't sell the story to the Daily Mail like the Cracknells do, I mean, you'll be fine.
Well, I do think for their children, that, yeah.
Isn't, I mean, it does seem terrible, doesn't it? I mean, I don't want to dwell on it too much. I've mentioned it already. But, I mean, the one thing, surely, if you're going to be critical of your husband for supposedly not being very good with the kids, you don't then write about it in the Daily Mail, do you?
I wouldn't do that, no, personally.
No.
No.
Yeah, there
no.
we are.
There's more to that, maybe.
So we've redefined beauty. What can we redefine now? What else can we do?
Do you know what? We could redefine confidence.
Okay.
Because a lot of people think confidence is about arrogance,
about
being loud, and about being cocky. You know what? It's not. Confidence, the sort of confidence that I trade in, that I work in, is about genuine humility, about giving of yourself freely to the world, and just an acceptance of life as it unfurls. You know, and stopping the blimmin' competition with each other.
Yes.
So life's an experience. It's not a competition. You let go of all of that, you will find a genuine, beautiful person on the inside.
Yeah. So you can teach that. So people can learn that. I mean, how would somebody listening to this who doesn't feel that confident, how would you say to them to kind of move that along?
The big piece of work I do is about helping people to identify that critical voice in their head, which is rooted in fear, is telling them that they have to compete with everyone else all the time, is living in the past,
well, not
or
good
going
enough
to
or something.
Future, not good enough, and worrying about the future and regretting the past and all the time missing the moment.
Yeah.
So I absolutely will get people to sort of identify that voice and start plugging into something a little bit kinder and wiser.
See, my parents somehow managed to give both myself and my sister, who very successful woman lives in America, works on Wall Street and all that, we always say, we don't know what it is that they did, but they gave us that somehow. And I try and give that to my own kids, and I hope that I can, because it's been the most valuable thing that I've ever had.
Did they let you be yourself?
Well, yeah. I mean, they were slightly kind of a bohemian, a little bit eccentric, you know. Right. We never owned any property. We always lived in rented flats and all that sort of thing. And none of it seemed very important, you know, but we both became very happy individuals.
But I do think that's probably because they were just into allowing you to become who you are.
Yeah.
So I think a parent's job is about creating healthy soil in which, you know, the children grow. It's not about deciding which way, you know, what sort of tree you're going to get, because, you know, that's really not our business, right?
No, quite. Exactly right. Well, Joe and Claire, thank you so much for talking to us, and have a nice day. And, you know, I'm around at 1 o'clock if you want to drop by.
Keep up the beauty, Mike.
I will. I'll try and stay beautiful, as they say. See you soon. Thank you very much indeed. Joe Emerson, confident coach, and Claire O'Connor from Scientific Skincare Advisor there. You can be beautiful without necessarily looking all that good. That's what I'm saying.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Let's talk to Helen White, who may or may not be in favour of that, but certainly probably is in favour of not wasting quite so many eggs. Helen, a very good afternoon to you.
Hiya, Mike. Good afternoon.
Listen, I've got a confession to make, right, which might upset a few people, but I had some a couple of fried eggs not that long ago, a couple of weeks ago, right? And I have a place in London and a place in Sussex, and I checked once I'd made the eggs when the eggs' sell-by date was, right? And do you know when it was?
When was it?
Last October.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And how were they?
They were fine. They were absolutely fine. And I couldn't imagine why I'd kept them for that long. But it's just that I'm not there an awful lot, and I don't always eat eggs very often, you know? And they were the last two in the box.
Well, there you go. I think, I mean, it goes to show you, doesn't it? And what we're focusing on, as you rightly say, is this you know, huge amount of eggs that are wasted. They're really popular. They're absolutely brilliant, aren't they? I mean, they're an instant meal.
Oh,
everybody knows a student. Anyway, you can knock an omelette together. And basically, if you can do that, you're set for life.
Absolutely.
But the article that you referred to earlier is showing the huge amount of waste. I think the article quotes 720 million
eggs. That's an incredible
eggs.
Number of it. I mean, I can't even imagine 720 million eggs, how big that would look. I mean, I don't know.
I can't begin to imagine what that must look like. But that forms part of, I mean, if you think about the whole amount of food waste that we waste in the UK, we waste 7.1 million tonnes of food a year in the UK. So those eggs are forming part of that huge tonnage. Now, at RAP, and we're the people behind Love Food Hate Waste, which is where I'm talking to you from, we estimate that basically there's 21,000 tonnes of edible egg waste every year. And that's basically...
That's awful, isn't it?
£66 million worth. That's the value of the wasted food.
Yeah.
And the main reason for that is that we're not using it in time. So...
And this is a country where we keep being told there's an ever-increasing need for food banks. I mean, that's shocking, really, isn't it?
The numbers are really shocking, and I deal with these numbers every day, Mike, and I'm still astonished by them, really.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of strategies that people like me and you can employ to make sure that we don't waste this really good food, because, I mean, it's good food. It's good food that's going to waste. So the first bit of advice that I give to people is around just kind of buy what you need, check what you need to buy. If you're not going to use the eggs in time, don't go buying a massive tray of them, because you're not going to get through them. Eggs have generally got, they need to be sold within 21 days, and that's the sort of the sell time on them. So you've got 3 weeks, basically. So if you're not going to get through a massive tray of eggs in 21 days, then buy a smaller number.
Yes.
So that's your first strategy. And then the second thing is about using what you buy. And as I mentioned, this is actually the main reason why the eggs are wasted. We're not using them in time. So there's a lot of stuff that you can do. You can freeze them. Did you know that you can freeze them if you're not going to use them?
I didn't know you could freeze eggs. No, that's interesting. I always assumed that you just had to keep them in the fridge. But I mean, having had my October eggs the other week, I'm not that bothered, to be honest.
Well, that's it. Well, what we always say as well is absolutely keep them in the fridge. So you might buy them in the supermarket. They're what we call ambient. So they're kind of like open, aren't they? They're usually in one of those areas that's got a little thatched roof or something. You can buy your eggs from there. And basically, they benefit, actually, when you're in the home from being stored in the fridge and kept in the box, because if you keep them in the box, there's less chance of them getting damaged when you, rattle the door around and stuff like that. So keep them in the box, in the fridge. And, of course, the food waste lady says your fridge needs to be set at less than 5 degrees.
Another thing, and you may be about to tell me this, but I mean, be a bit more imaginative with what you do with them as well, because you can also do, you don't just have to, make a frittata or just a fried egg, or, you can do all sorts of things with them.
You can do all kinds of things with them. And the thing I was talking about was about freezing as well. And I'll kind of pass this on to your listeners. So basically, this is how I would do it. So if you need to freeze them, if you've got a couple that you're not going to use up and you've got no immediate plans for them, don't let them go to waste. Basically, just separate the yolks and the whites, because this just gives you a bit more options. If you mix it up, then really you can only use it for something where there's a mixed egg, like an omelette.
Yes.
But if you actually separate them, you give yourself more choice to do what you want with them. And then you can just basically freeze them in a freezer bag or an airtight container. With the yolk, I'd just blend it a little bit first. But the yolks you can just pop in.
Do you think the manufacturers are getting a bit over sort of zealous and making and then sort of having too producing too many eggs?
I don't know whether it's about production, because they do certainly seem to be incredibly popular. I think they're healthy. People are really into kind of healthy lifestyles. They're also incredibly convenient, like we mentioned at the beginning. You can put a great meal, you can put a wonderful tortilla on the table in a matter of minutes if you've got some eggs. But I think always my kind of my little boy's only 7 at the moment, but I've kind of instructed him that, when you go off to college or whatever, if you've got a box of eggs, you've always got dinner.
Yeah, my favourite used to be dropping an egg into some soup, which really makes it a lot
absolutely.
more sort of filling,
It's lovely, yeah. Poached egg in soup is delicious.
It really is,
and,
yeah.
And also kind of like to top things like, you
kippers,
know, corned beef hash.
Poached egg and kippers, yeah. Corned beef hash. Yeah, you're
an
talking
egg on
my
the
language.
Top of most things. Yeah, it's not a bad thing, is it? Right. The one tip I'd really share is if you are going to freeze the egg, so basically label that bag or put something on the box so that you know, because you don't want any unidentified frozen objects.
That's very good. That's very good advice,
Helen. I know from experience, yes. Egg whites in the freezer. They look a bit strange.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. Helen, thank you very much indeed. Helen White, Special Advisor on Household Food Waste. Imagine that, talking about eggs with somebody called Helen White.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Pour me something tall and strong. Make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Well, that's certainly true. It is 5 o'clock somewhere. There are those people who think 5 o'clock isn't necessarily the kick-off point anyway. There are some people who go to the pub at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can now do that, of course. Unbelievably, though, it's Lloyd's of London who are calling time on drink and drugs, one of the oldest institutions in the country, 331 years old. They're now getting rid of the bar in the building, and they're telling people you can't come to work drunk anymore. What is the world coming to, for heaven's sake? We're going to talk to Neil Wallace in a moment, a media consultant, former newspaper editor, a man who knows a thing or two about the old liquid lunches. But first, Frankie is in East London. Hello, Frankie.
Hello, Mike. How are you, mate?
I'm very, very well.
And I've got to tell you, Mike, I have got to tell you the anger that I have got. I'm on tablets over the anger. I've got to tell you, I am bang in trouble because I cannot control the absolute level of dishonesty that's going on in our country now.
I know.
I'll tell you what. If there was a B-52 flying over the Houses of Parliament now, there wouldn't be enough on board to do the damage. I've got to tell you now, we've gone back to the dinosaur ages. People used to look up to us in our country years ago, not too far along ago, in places like out of Borneo, Bangladesh, you name it. They looked up to us because of our quality of democracy. Look at this little mob you've got in there now. They are absolutely diabolical.
Well, people said to me, Frankie,
liberty, what they're getting away with.
People said to me, Frankie, if this was happening in a country in South America, we'd be sending in the United Nations.
I'll tell you what we need, Mike. We need a good dose of Donald Trump. And I've got to tell you, the sooner we stop doing our Pilates, I mean, as for that bird who phoned up earlier on about the business about the monarchy, listen, I'm 100% behind her.
She can't
do
anything.
I was on LBC the other day.
Don't talk about them.
I don't want to publicise.
Don't go on there.
Viral.
Don't go on there, for heaven's sake.
I won't be there.
Stay with Talk Radio, man.
On the left, and I've elbowed them. I've elbowed them.
Good. Top man.
Listen,
top man.
Mike, listen, what they got to do now, they have got to unload this little lot now, get rid of a lot of them, wipe them out. Get in there with an exocet and do away with a lot of them because they are driving our country.
Listen, I can tell you're angry, Frankie, but violence is not the answer. But listen, you're absolutely right. We've got to vote them out. That's what we've got to do. And we've got to get them to do what we want them to do. And that's the answer. But Frankie, listen, welcome to Talk Radio. It's a far more vibrant radio station than that other one that we don't like to mention. And you also get much more common sense on it. And we won't make fun of you because you voted to leave the United States of Europe, for heaven's sake. Let's talk to Neil Wallace about drinking. Neil, a very good afternoon to you.
Cheers.
Feel free to follow Frankie. Frankie's a very angry man. He maybe should have a couple of glasses of Sauvignon and calm down a bit.
Well, he certainly seemed to be in quite a rage.
Yes.
Understandable rage, of course.
Yes.
Because of what's been going on is simply shocking and outrageous.
It really
and
is.
A disgrace.
It really is.
He's quite right about, you know, this is the country that was looked up to as the beacon of the world.
I know, it's staggering.
And our parliamentarians have just ridden a coach and horses.
No, funny you should mention the parliamentarians, because you and I have been around more years than we care to remember. But we remember, I'm sure, you've probably been on one or two of them. Well, you're also a harder worker than I was, on a few liquid lunches. But one of the places you could now still drink, sort of at your work, as it were, is the Houses of Parliament, which is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. And not only that, it's also heavily subsidised.
Yes. And I mean, the point
alcohol
is...
Alcohol there is heavily subsidised. So they feel free to have their long liquid lunches, while the rest of the world apparently has been told that you can't have a pint at lunchtime.
No, exactly that right.
Old are we? Are we 17 or are we 7? Or are we actually grown-ups? I mean, I don't drink that much at lunchtime. I've done it my time.
Yeah.
But frankly, the idea that you say to a working man that you, or a woman that you can't go for a quick pint or a glass of wine during your own time at lunchtime, I find staggering.
But isn't it now the case, though, Neil, that the days when you and I were roaming around Fleet Street, when it was still Fleet Street, and you'd come out, you'd pop out of the Bouverie Street office, you'd go across to the wine press, you'd have a couple of glasses of wine there, you'd pop down to the Printer's Pie, you might pop up to the Wig and Pen, Elvino's. I mean, that was an incredible time, and an incredible amount of alcohol was being drunk and consumed. And newspapers in those days sold an awful lot more papers.
They certainly did. I used to know a bloke whose trick was to get in the office, take his jacket off,
right,
put it on the back of the chair,
yep,
open up a notebook on it, and then slip out the back door and come back 2 hours later.
I knew another guy, right, who just used to walk around with his jacket on all the time. He was an executive of the Express. Just used to walk around with his jacket on all the time, so you couldn't tell whether he was coming or going or just being there.
Yeah. You know, at the Mirror Group in years and years gone by, they used to have a trolley that went round the executive suite to all the executives' offices, and it would top up bottles of spirit.
Right.
And so they would restock the fridges with bottles of whiskey, bottles of wine,
right,
bottles of... And it was considered a common thing to do.
Incredible.
For a very long time, that's how it worked. You know, and though, as you quite rightly say, those newspapers used to go out. I used to know an editor who would go out for lunch every single day.
Right.
And he would start his lunch with a pint of Black Velvet, before Black Velvet being a pint of champagne,
right,
and Guinness.
Yes. And, well, I mean, you know, expenses were very good in those days as well. But what do you make of Lloyd's of London? I mean, Lloyd's are basically now empowering their security guards to remove the passes of people who are trying to get into work who may have had a drink. If they smell of alcohol, they're going to take their pass off them and not let them in.
It's so draconian, isn't it? It's completely out of control, that. And I mean, the irony is, of course, is that there's only about 800 people actually working, are directly employed by Lloyd's of London.
Yes.
But there are 40,000 people with passes to go in and out there. So how on earth can you monitor 40,000 people in a day?
Mm.
It just seems nuts, doesn't it?
Well, it does. But, I mean, one of the reasons they're doing it is because apparently Bloomberg highlighted a catalogue of sexual and verbal misconduct claims, many of them apparently fuelled by alcohol abuse. It sounds like Sodom and Gomorrah in there.
Yeah, I don't know how you get a job there, then.
Well, quite. Well, that's the sort of thing that get you in trouble nowadays. You can't say that sort of thing.
You can't make jokes like that, can you? But in truth, anything like that is vile. But people who do that kind of thing, I think, do it anyway.
Yes.
And they will find a way to do it anyway, because that's their inclination. I feel dreadfully sorry for any woman who's been put through that. I mean, the traditional Christmas party was always, for too many years, a minefield for some women. But it just seems that the answer is to any kind of sexual misconduct is the person should be either fired or prosecuted,
yes,
straight away.
Well, it's,
and
like
I
this,
thought no, that was a far bigger deterrent.
But that's the problem now, Neil, isn't it? Instead of taking an individual and saying to them, look, you are in breach of all sorts of regulations, you are going to be disciplined, you're going to be fined, you're going to be fined, something like that, they go after everybody instead of going after the people that are the actual, you
absolutely,
know, people,
yes,
guilty of doing the wrong thing.
It's a version of sort of virtue signaling in a way. You know, they want to be seen to be doing the right thing. And the fact that it then becomes completely over the top is, you know, they don't really care about what they're more interested in, is being seen to be doing something.
Yes.
And, you know, it completely lacks proportionality, doesn't it?
It really does.
And this seems the classic of a sledgehammer to crack a nut.
Well, I can't imagine that most companies now will even consider having Christmas parties. There's bound to be a point at which they just say, it's not worth doing.
Yes, you'd have thought so.
Yeah.
You'd have thought so, the potential issues that arise. But, I mean, all of this... So, you know, you cancel a Christmas party basically because you're frightened something might happen. Well, the people who really suffer in that, isn't it, is the staff who then no longer have a chance of a bit of a knees up, you
yeah,
know? I mean,
I know.
It's over the top, so disproportionate.
And you don't know where it's going. You don't know where it's going to end. But listen, I presume you're now off for a very heavy lunch at the Savoy or something. Eh?
Well, that's where I usually go. Although I might swap it for the Ritz today.
Yes, why not? Indeed, yes. It's a hard life being a media consultant. See if you can get a newspaper editor to take you out for lunch. Although I'm told that even newspaper editors now don't have the budget to take people like you out for lunch.
Yeah, well, no, you know, you don't know the right newspaper editors then.
I'll see what I can do. Neil, thank you very much indeed. Neil Wallace, media consultant, former newspaper editor himself, of course. Of course, I'm just being slightly coy about the newspaper editor's lunch. There are some out there who will buy you lunch, even now. I had one bought for me just the other day. But the idea that you can't any longer drink at lunchtime is sort of not surprising to me, but rather ridiculous that they're going to give the right of refusal to enter a building to a security guard. I mean, you don't want to give too much power to security guards, in my experience, because they will, no doubt, they will use it against you.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.